Welcome to this week's edition of the Windmill Sports Show. I'm your host, Ken Eby, here with Josh Nagel from Sportsline. Thanks for filling in last week, Josh. I was slinging wings, as you saw after the show last week. He came down to the 4th of July wing cook-off, and I was on the street, and we sold about $30,000 worth of wings over a couple of days, and it was just absolutely crazy. And we won an award again this year, so we took third for best wings.
Yeah, it's awesome, Ken.
You actually came out for the wing that ended up winning the award.
Right, yeah, I mentioned that on the air that, you know, I've been going down for years. I remember back up when it first started, whatever, 6-7 years ago now. I told the audience on the air last week, man, first year I ever went down there, it was the first time the Buffalo Blue Cheese was, like, introduced. I tried it, and at the time talked to, you know, a gentleman who was working for the Calhoun, and said, that's, like, the best wing I've ever had. It finished, like, second or third place that year for top flavor or whatever. And I said last week on the air as well, like, hey, I'm heading down there after the show's over to get more of those. Go down there. And as you said, absolutely, like, it's crazy. Calhoun booth had this huge line, like, down the street. Like, wow, popular. You know, all the vendors were doing, you know, good business. But it was crazy. You know, like you said, all kinds of new flavors again. People coming in left and right. But I just went straight up, went for the Buffalo Blue Cheese. And you told me, yeah, before the show started, got another top three with it. Right?
Yeah, so absolutely. Sweet. Got a trophy. Yeah. Always exciting to get a trophy. So I appreciate you and think Tommy filled in last week.
Yeah, he and I both went down there.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, true. That's right. Had some beers and some wings, and we ended up winning a trophy. So thanks to you guys. And I didn't talk. I was on the show. I had Under and Joey Chestnut hot dog eating contest too, because I was I actually handicapped it, Josh. And here's the reason I handicapped it. He's not going to be pressed by anybody down the stretch, so he's going to slow down a little bit. So I had him under 74 dogs.
All right, fair enough. You know what's funny? The night before that, I saw, you know, they did a 30 for 30 just on him the whole
hot dog. I saw that in the Kobayashi thing.
Yeah, I could.
That was great.
I went ahead and watched it. But you know what? There's some interesting behind-the-scenes details in the documentary. But at the same time, I just still can't get behind the whole thing. I mean, the idea of it being some kind of sport or whatever. I just wonder, seriously, there's just something superhuman. Like, it's just not right. Just like people who can, you know, dunk by jumping off from the free throw line. Only like five people in the world could do it. People with this metabolism, or whatever it takes to do that, it's something, you know, they're cut from a different genetic cloth. Whatever they do, you know, go out there once a year and just engage in this. I mean, it's just a little bit overboard. But I'm always curious what they don't seem to ask, you know, is how does he feel after that? After he
miserable, because it takes about 3 days.
After he wins his championship at one of these events, oh, I just can't imagine the aftermath of trying to pull that off.
No, he says he feels miserable for
a few
days. He trains for it and everything, drinks a bunch of water and rice, eats rice.
At some point, he's getting up there, right? No matter who you are, you can't. Father time takes over, right? His metabolism can't last. Because the guy's what? He's in his late 30s now. Yeah. He's going to have to slow down at some point.
He comes for the rib eating. He comes for the rib cook-off, too.
He won that, too.
Yeah.
So the other thing I'm curious about is how do you score that? How do you score that it's eaten when there can be...
Okay. Wait, they put X amount of weight in front of you.
Okay, and so, I was always curious how you score those.
So if you have 30 pounds, you know what I mean? And then you throw your bones back in the container, I guess, or whatever. And then you weigh the end result, and that's how you come up with how many pounds you eat. But he was over when he was here for the rib eating contest. When I met him, we were at a bar over there, like Oski's or something afterwards, and he was in there drinking. So he must not have been too pressed. He probably still ate 12 pounds of ribs, Josh. I mean, that's a lot of beef, a lot of pork, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, it goes right to me, though, the quote-unquote, to me, competitive eating is just kind of, you know, an oxymoron. I mean, you go to the buffet anywhere, you know, if you want to see people do that. And I don't get it, because obviously, you know, I'm not exactly, you know, Mr. America or anything, but I have like two hot dogs and I'm done. I mean, I don't know how people could even
eat 70?
Yeah.
Eat 70?
Like I said, superhuman. But having said that, it's 4th of July traditions
70
go.
Hot
fireworks
dogs.
And everything. I'll put lots of things above.
70
the hot dogs,
Josh. 70.
I know. Real deal. You know, full thing, full bun.
In 12 minutes, Josh.
I know.
That's ridiculous.
I just don't see the entertainment value.
I don't eat 70 hot dogs in a year.
I believe that. I probably don't either.
Well, I'd be
once in a while. Packet looks good at the store. Like, hey, I'll get those. Half of them go bad.
That's
but
six
I'd have
a month.
Like four or six.
Six.
Yeah.
Six would be 72. That's the world. I don't eat six hot dogs. I don't eat 72 in a year. I don't eat 72 in 2 years.
I may not
have had 72 hot dogs in my entire life.
Yeah, I believe that as well.
I have
no idea how many.
And I can tell you right now, I've never dunked a bun. I have, and it's disgusting on accident. But you know how they dunk the bun in the water to make it soft and more, and so they use that to. Anyways, I won my bet. A little gentleman's wager. Picked up a fun stick, $100. You know, I had it under. So, anyways, what else is going on? Like I said, thanks to you and Josh. Make sure you guys know you can get Josh's stuff on Sportsline. A bunch of stuff coming out with college football right here coming up. what's he? His first eating comp was ever here in Reno. One of our listeners just texted me that. So,
all right.
So, anyways, yeah, thanks, Tommy. So, what's going on? You got a lot of articles on Sportsline right now, Josh?
Yeah, of course. We're coming out of the All-Star break. As you know, it's like, there's a few days dead period there with no baseball, at least. That's coming back to life. But you're right. During that time, we had everything else going on between golf. Oh, there's Wimbledon. We've been doing tons of stuff on, but golf, football preparation. So, there's really around-the-clock horse racing. There's no real slow time. Not to mention we've been doing a lot lately with mixed martial arts. There's a Bellator card tonight and a UFC card tomorrow night. And we have our main expert guy who's really good at it. He's doing full write-ups for every fight.
Good. Good. We'll get into that a little bit later. You know, have you been watching the World Series? You know, I was watching the World Series the other day, the first time they had it on ESPN, Josh. And I don't know if you remember, but a few months ago, we had a couple of guys on the show from Ninja Poker.
Yeah, I remember him.
And the one guy's name was Chris Wallace. He was the one that, I think he won the $25,000 bracelet event.
I think it was 10K horse.
Was it 10K about. Horse?
Yeah. Yeah, he said he had a bracelet for 10K horse.
I thought it was high.
So anyways, that's impressive enough.
Yeah, but anyways, his name was Chris Wallace. Well, right. I'm watching the World Series on ESPN the other night, and he was on there. He was at the featured table, and so he was in there mixing it up. Antonio Estefandari was at the table, and some multiple other people. And they were talking about his accomplishments and winning that, you know. So it was pretty impressive, but it was neat that we had the guy on the table, and then he was on the featured table for the World Series of Poker. And if I'm not certain, they're coming back to town here real shortly because I was already asked if they could come back on the show and talk a little bit more about poker. But anyways, I was just it's like surprise, you know. I go home, I turn on, World Series of Poker, turn on ESPN, you know,
yeah.
On a little delay, like probably a 30-minute delay or 20-minute delay. I don't know what the delay is. It can't be immediate because there's too much information that would be given
away. Exactly right.
And there he was. I was like, wow, there he is.
No, that's cool. But like you said, the Ninja Poker thing I found fascinating too because they brought a whole new novel concept, a series of tournaments with just different stuff that you don't see. Remember that different not say promotions, but different rules that you just wouldn't see in other tournaments. Like, they had the tournament where you could turn in your chips and get a certain amount of equity back. If you didn't want to keep playing, it was like 3 days and you had X amount of chips. You could turn your chips in for a payout at that point. Mm-hmm. And they had the thing, what they call it, like the final chance tournament, whatever. You bust out, you get another stack of 15 big blinds immediately.
Something like that,
yeah. They did some
that's interesting
innovative stuff, which I would be curious to actually play in tournaments like that and see if I like it or not. But yeah, I remember they were interesting.
Yeah, so I'm going to go down there and hopefully play some events when they do return back to the local area. So Ninja Poker, it's very, very exciting. So I'm a big poker player anyways. You know, I've been getting my money in so good lately and just been on the bottom end. I got involved in a big pot down at the Legacy the other night. It was about a $1,500 pot, maybe a little bit more. And I had A7, and the flop came down 7-7-4. And, I got a guy bets into me. I raise. He re-raises. I push. He calls. He turns over 7-8. You know the rest of the story.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't think you had a seven. That's what I always hear. I go, no, I know that I have a seven. I had A7 of hearts.
Yeah.
And of course he spikes the eight on the river. He had 7-8. So I had him dead to it. You know, to basically the board pairing or him hitting an eight. So pretty thin, Josh. Pretty thin. But anyways.
I hear you.
And I had the I flopped the nut flush the other day, and a guy makes a straight flush on the river. So, anyways, I've been running a little bit salty. Been getting my money in really good, really good. And but anyways, you've been watching some of the World Series of Poker.
Yeah, Ken, that's one of those things where it takes a toll. Everyone knows the variance, and sometimes you hope the luck evens out. And I think over time, I've gotten better at kind of rolling with it. You know, the guy hits him 1 hour, and you can just kind of smile. It doesn't affect me. Like, I used to just get angry, or I just couldn't sleep for 3 days. And these days, it doesn't have the same effect. But you know what? When you're running like that, it still never feels good. You're like, okay, maybe. I was running great for 3 months, and that was awesome. But when it regresses and changes against you, there's still a uncomfortable feeling. But, yeah, I've been watching, especially now. Can you mention, I think the live coverage is better than ever. The way the technology has gone, evolved in the last couple of years now, it is pretty sweet now. You're watching the main event on TV, just 30-minute delay on either ESPN or PokerGo, which, by the way, now is the time of year. It only pays, really a few months a year to have a PokerGo subscription, which I do have, though. But ESPN goes off the air. You just flip on PokerGo, and they keep it going, same commentators. But you're saying all the cards live, you said just 30-minute delay. Instead of having to wait 6 months and just seeing some whole cards, you get to see the whole thing with good commentary. I've been fascinated by it. And it's been always, you know, you see new players you're not aware of and maybe a couple notables who get down deep. And I know the other night you and I were texting about it. I didn't know you were watching. It was interesting. But, you know, former NFL player Richard Seymour has got a few Super Bowl titles. And he actually has some results. I mean, I knew he was a fairly serious poker player, but he made a pretty deep run. I think you and I, you know, they featured some episodes with him the other night for a few hours. Started watching at the same time. It's just too bad because he still just finished barely above 100th, which out of 8,000-plus players is not a bad run no matter who you are. So it's a respectable thing. But when we started watching, man, boy, did he go downhill. He started at the table at the time. It was about $3 million. I think it was like the second biggest stack at his table given where the blinds were. He was in good shape. And then he had one pot where he made a really bad non-call. He made
lay
a bad
down,
lay
the
down.
Two tens.
And then he had a couple others after that. It was weird. When he saw that he made the bad laydown, he just sort of
tilted.
Crumpled.
Yeah. Tilted.
It was so funny because you wonder, the guy, no matter who you are, you don't necessarily just get $3 million in chips by accident. So I feel like if you watched him play early on, he cuts a fairly imposing figure. You know, he's still a physically imposing guy. I'm thinking he looks reasonably comfortable with the chips. And what I'm thinking is maybe early on in the tournament and other tables with amateurs and stuff, he probably has a share of intimidating factors with other weak players, you know? He's probably able to manipulate them. You get down to 100 players, though, and everyone's pretty good. There's not really that factor that he runs anyone else over. And I thought it was interesting because after that hand, like I said, I was just texting you, man, I'm just waiting to see him win a pot. I don't think he did after that. But again, you know, at risk of criticizing the guy who finished in, you know, near the top 100. From that point on, though, he was like the definition of weak tight. It was hard to watch. A couple times in a row, Ken, after that, just a few revolutions after he made that bad laydown with the overpair, he was open folding pocket pairs and unraised pots. Where, like, he was in the low jack or high jack. I saw him throw away pocket fours, and then I saw him throw away pocket sixes. Like, man, if you're going to do that, you need to walk away for a while.
Especially a guy that the money probably isn't a big factor in his life. He ended up finishing 131st, and he cashed $59,000-ish, you know, right around there. So, but with that being said, you know, the pocket tens lay down, I was watching it, and I'm probably going to not be 100% correct, but it was a very, very dry board. Yeah. It was like a 2-4-9.
2-4-8.
2-4-8. There you
but
go.
I'll give you a set the table real quick, but you're almost exactly right. But there was a late position raise. It's kind of funny. Standard. It was on the button, but the guy had a real hand. So the button's got ace, king of diamonds, you know, legit hand. Seymour's in the small blind. Of course, he's underrepped. That was part of what the issue was for him, is he was underrepped the whole way. It's why he had such a big advantage. But he decides to play it safe. You never know what's going on. Plus, again, he's somewhat inexperienced. But pocket 10's out of position. Most people repump it. He could have got it all in, and who knows what happened, right? But he just flats with the pocket 10's in the small blind. Guy in the big blind, shorter stack of the three. He's got 5-6 offsuit. Okay, half price. He just tosses it in. You're right. Deuce 4-8, rainbow. So no flush. The guy had ace, king of diamonds, so he doesn't flop anything. And so it goes check, check. Guy on the button just says, okay, C-bit. Maybe nobody's got anything C-bit here. Seymour just called. That's where he actually could have popped it, too, and I bet you the 5-6 guy releases.
Sure.
But, of course, he calls there again. So that's a tight, weak play. He probably should have popped it. But instead, so the 5-6 guy goes, you know what? And he was clearly targeting the opener. He's like, if that guy's got nothing, ace, king, ace, queen, he's going to have to fold to this shove, an unpaired. You know, and if he does have something, then, well, you got a bunch of outs. So,
he's got a gut shot straight.
Right, throw. So he's like, this guy probably can't fade a double gutter, too. So deuce, you know, he had two ways to win. He needs a 3 or whatever, 6. And 3 or 7, I should say. So he's finally, you know, that's what he's planning on doing. He figures Seymour probably has nothing, and he's just targeting the opener. So, sure enough, he shoves the million.
Well, he figured Seymour could not be that strong
to
in that
just
position.
Called twice, right? He called preflop, just called up. Yeah, maybe he's got a weak 8 they probably laid down. But he was clearly wasn't worried about him. So he's just trying to get through the initial guy like you might with any other sort of squeeze play. And so sure enough, the ace-king guy's like, oh, that sucks. I could have checked. He mucks his hand, ace-king, no pair, no draw. He gets rid of it. And suddenly it's back on Seymour, and you can tell. Eventually the guy who shoved realizes, uh-oh, you know, this guy's got a real decision. Seymour ultimately tells him he has an overpair. The commentators, I thought, did a great job of explaining it, and I don't know if you've been following that, Kim, but some of them were really good. One of them was Nick Schulman, who's the best out there. He wasn't there that night, but the woman who does some, Jamie Kirksetter, I believe her name is, she's very good at explaining some of the, you know, concepts of why you should call and whatnot. And the way they explained it is, yeah, definitely, both guys are in the blinds there. If he shoves, first of all, there was no flush draw available, so you're not looking to protect against that. So you wonder, like, if you rip it, if you call.
There was no open-end straight draw.
Right, and there was no way to have an open-ender. And also, you might fear, like, a set of Dewey or something coming out, but at the same time, you're like, what, the guy would just rip it against two players? When there's no flush or straight draw, you figure, I mean, he's almost got the, you know, board drawing dead to an overpair connecting for a set on the turn. And so, you know, just smacked of something odd's going on. And as she mentioned in the commentary, even though your range is a little bit looser at the big blind, it's still unlikely you're going to call even a half, you know, a discounted raise with 8-4. Like, even him showing up with two pair, really unlikely, because it'd have to be the worst two pair you've ever seen. So when you go through all these things, like, yeah, there's no way that he's trying to deny equity to draws. It's really unlikely he's got a set, and two pairs unlikely. All these things just add up to, yeah, shoving with some sort of gut shot, hoping everybody folds. And she even said, yeah, watch, Seymour might, you know, get onto this and predict, you know, figure this out, make the call, which he should have done. He eventually mucks. I thought the worst part of it is the advantage that he didn't exploit on his own end was understanding just how under-repped his hand was. It was beautiful if you had done it on purpose, and this is kind of the result you're looking for, where you just call preflop with a big pair to a late position raise. No one expects you to wake up with that. And then the guy in the big blind clearly didn't expect him to have that either. So when you've got that guy crushed, you're thinking, yeah, and again, talking blockers, whatever, his pair is high enough to where even, you know, you're not necessarily, again, fearing too many draws. His pair is kind of separated from the board. I was surprised. Here's the thing, too, at the time. I said he had just north of, or I should say south of, well, $3 million. This cost him $1 million. Put it this way. If he wins the pot,
that's four million chips.
He's in position. One thing I've learned about tournaments this late, though, there's not too many positions. You have to accumulate chips at some point. There's not too many situations where you're in a really good position to do so. No matter what, he wouldn't have been drawn dead.
I believe.
And you see what I mean?
I believe his call would have only been about 38 or 39% of his stack.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't like he was shoving in 80% of his stack and he was going to be chipped dead.
I said he had just south of $3 million. And if he loses that pot, he loses about $1 million, which means even if, like I said, if he loses, he's not out. He's still viable. Yeah. Right. And yet, if he chips up, it's a good way getting the best of it to go up to $4 million. Yeah. But yeah, he eventually, as you saw, he eventually makes sort of the hero fold, so to speak. The guy says, hey, you want to wait half an hour? The guy wasn't trying to be a jerk. He's like, you can see it on TV, or I can show you now. And Seymour's like, yeah, I'd like to see it now. He tables the 5-6, and you can just tell that deflated him, and he wasn't the same.
You can see it on TV, or I can embarrass you right now. At least he was.
No, actually, I think Seymour actively asked. He's like, the guy says, you're going to see it 30 minutes anyway. Yeah, you want it now? Okay.
Yeah. Crazy. So Richard Seymour finished 31st for 59K. So John the Hawk Stevens is here. Let's get him mic'd up, and we'll come back and continue talking sports and poker and everything
else.
Good
tease right there.
That's right. All right. Let's be back after these messages on ESPN 94.5 FM. Welcome back. I'm your host, Kenny B, here with Josh Nagel from Sportsline. You can get his stuff at sportsline.com and follow him on Twitter at JoshNagel1. And we got John the Hawk Stevens mic'd up.
He's here. What's happening, Kenny?
Not much. Josh and I were talking a little bit about poker. They're down to the final 24. When I first started doing a little bit of research today, they were at 28. Now they're down to 24. No really big names left either. And you know, and I have a standing bet with any of you guys. I'll give you for $100. I'll give you 5-1. You pick out 100 players, and I'll bet you.
You'll take the field or the rest.
I'll take the field.
I'll do that sometime.
Yeah.
Anything about the remaining guys, I'd like to do that. But, Ken, you're right. It was too bad because especially we got down to the final 100 or so. There were a few pretty notable names.
Like, Estefan Dari was the last big name.
It'd be cool
he busted it at 82.
At least somebody that you know, get down there to the end. He would have been, like I said, the patriarch. Yeah, he was the most well-known of anyone. Everyone's rooting for him. As I mentioned to you, one of the, what I call your GTO bots, one of the very well-known young players, Sam Greenwood, was also going deep. He ended up busting, I think, around 36. So that was it, though, in terms of notables that everyone would have known. Now that you like sit down at 24, it's a bunch of, there's going to be a otherwise anonymous new champion who everyone will learn about by the time they get there. But for what it's worth, you know, all these somewhat unknown players, you come to find out, you know, they've been playing for X amount of years. Every time you get down to the final table, I'll put it this way, with some exceptions, there are a few total donkeys. Like you figure out like John Sin, who won it last year, where he was 11th in the main event the prior year. The guy's a feared cash game player at Live at the Bike in L.A. He's been known. So it's not like these, but they're just not, you know, TV superstars.
You got to get lucky.
You mentioned with Esfand Diari.
I don't care how good you are, you have to get lucky.
It was too bad, Ken, because, you know, his style is very well tailored to tournaments like the main event, because people think he's not quite as loose as he is perceived, and yet he has a great advantage of he knows how to play well with amateurs. He's very similar to Negreanu, but he's very affable, you know, kind of talks. He's very good at making them feel relaxed, talking them into giving up the info. He's also great against world-class players.
He coined the phrase, wee!
Yeah, and he's also good at you know, he's sort of the silent assassin, though. I mean, he's good at getting chips with very little risk.
Well, he's a magician.
Three and four bets. But like I said, he's also kind of the key to it all is he's more solid than people realize. Early in his career, he was kind of wild. And that reputation has served him well because people look him up when he has something. But I would mention to you before the show, I didn't know if you saw his – I was watching it last night in Poker Go. It's pretty sad, his bust out hand, because he lost to this guy, San Martino, from Italy, who I believe is still in there. I haven't been terribly impressed with the guy. I mean, he's the – He's the calling station of all stations. But Esfandiari had been up and down, but he had a little under $4 million. Not too bad. He's treading water. Stacks are getting higher, but 3.9, not so bad. But he gets in this hand with the San Martino guy who opens. His opponent opens with an ace-queen, like, from early position, right? Esfandiari three bets with ace-king a couple seats over, I think, you know, hijack type of area. The guy's thinking about it, and he's got – Esfandiari has him covered, but it's, like, $3.9 million to about just under $3 million. He puts in a pretty big three-bet. It went from, like, I want to say up from, like, 120 to 270. And the guy's really thinking about it. But, again, Esfandiari's reputation is such that you don't know. He does three-bet a lot with not much. And so the guy, you can tell, he's totally hung up on, this hand's probably too good to fold, not good enough to, like, go wild and shove with, right? Only going to get called if you're beat. So he's not sure what to do. You know, he really tanks it. And finally he decides on the just call thing. Okay, not the worst thing in the world, right? But the flop comes out, Ken, it's like deuce-10-king, right? Couldn't it be better for Ace? So the ace-king completely connects. He checks. As funny as puts in a good size.
When did the jack
too.
Get there? The river or the turn?
Because he puts it. But here's why he should have never been in there. One pre-flop, okay, I understand the call. But on the flop, as funny as knows what's going on. He wasn't messing around. He puts in a good size bet, say, almost fully pot size. Like, you cannot call that with just a gut shot. So even the commentator's like, yeah, he's got to be gone now. You whiffed your ace queen. Of course, if it comes ace high, you're going broke anyway. But flop misses you entirely. It's time to be done. And like I said, not to mention, he's going to have to put in after the call on the flop.
Yeah.
Over half a stack just for nothing but a gutter. He does it anyway. Jack comes on the turn. Of course, they get it in. That was more or less that.
He must have thought that he had six outs or seven outs.
Like
he must have thought ace was
also
good.
Win with an ace, maybe. But anyhow, so he hits it, and that was that. Freddie Ari's left with like eight big blinds, and a few hands later gets in with a pocket
it
pair.
Is what it is.
And yeah, it's just too bad because, like I said, but if he wins that, as Fandiari gets back up to about $7 million,
well, he's a threat then,
right? And so that was it. And like I mentioned, you know, there was a couple other notable bust outs, yeah. But the last well-known poker celebrity—that's how he went out.
John, have you been watching the World Series?
Yeah, not.
Do you like the format?
I
like the format now. The way
I do too.
I mean, I don't like the November 9. I never did like the November 9.
I thought that was awful.
There's no reason why you should be able to hire a poker coach.
Momentum exists in poker.
Oh, absolutely.
Poker, so
and not you hire poker coaches to tell you how to play against all these players, their weaknesses and stuff. I'm with you, man. Let's get it done. Get it done. I mean,
absolutely.
So absolutely fantastic stuff. So, you know, it looks like we're down to 24 players right now. There was 8,569 entrants, 24 remaining. The prize pool was $80 million.
Wow.
That's absolutely crazy. Crazy.
$10 million the first.
$10 million
second
the first.
Biggest prize ever to 2006. Yeah. So
absolutely crazy. So
Jamie Gold, is that his?
Yep, he still holds that record.
Wow. Jamie Gold. That's just what he – and that's what we're talking about about poker, John. And you're dabbling into it more and more now.
Yeah.
But you see, no matter how good of a poker player you are, there is a lot of luck involved. Because just going back to Josh's comment right there, there's no – Antonio got unlucky. The other guy got lucky. No matter how good you play, you have to wade through. The guy that's going to win this thing, he's going to wade through 8,568 landmines.
It's unbelievable.
Landmines. Yeah. I mean, so you can flop top set all day long, but eventually if you get it all in over and over and over, somebody's going to draw out on you. It just happens.
I
mean, and that's the reason. You know, when you look at the Phil Hellmuths and the Negreanus and the Eric Sedels and the Johnny Chans, that's the reason these fields have gotten so big. You don't see them constantly at the main table or at the final table anymore.
They have targets on their backs.
And they have targets on their backs.
They don't care if they win. You just, I just took out Hellmuth.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I told you my Dannemann story the year.
It's worth noting Phil Hellmuth played terribly this year, so he deserved what he got.
Well, did you?
And you know what? I'm not into the whole thing. It's something that also led to the big population this year is the whole dynamic or trend of late reg, and I don't think they should allow it in the main event. For everything else, fine. But literally letting people come in as, you know, self-explanatory, late registration, they leave the doors open for so many levels after the tournament's already progress. I just think for the main event, like, sign up and show up on your day, and no more of this walk-up. But Hellmuth was late because he'd been on vacation in the Bahamas
That's his gig, though.
Oh, yeah, he's usually late anyway, but he was super late this time.
Well, we're talking about late registration.
But yeah, I think he late reg, so you start with fewer chips to begin with. Lost almost all his chips where he bluffed off a guy that had next to zero chance of folding. And then he was short-stacked and then got it in bad, so he had a very poor show.
Having a vacation as
I think it was in the Galapagos.
One of the,
that's where it was.
As one of the most high-profile poker players in the world during the World
Series. He's known for coming in elaborate costumes.
Of course.
Like, he was a general one time.
Yeah.
And then he was like, had all
the goofy stuff.
Yeah. He's begging for it.
Yeah, well, John and Josh, and I honestly believe this, if you win the World Series, you should retire because you're going to go broke. The only reason these guys are still playing through years and years, it's book deals. And it's people putting them in to wear that logo on their sleeve. No, and that's where
I agree. It's rare when they don't, Ken, but you've seen some of them are one-hit wonders. Jamie Gold pretty famously went broke. Jerry Yang did. But you know what? Some of them haven't. It's just per situation basis.
Well, look at
Mattisau. Because Greg Raymer is very good. Like, he's gone on to have great success. His tournament catches, he's a very viable pro.
But when's it going to end?
And so is Joseph Hasham. But you're right, but especially at this day and age. But you're right, you're set for life. You win that main event, you have sponsors, everyone's going to pay your buy-in fees anyway, and you can just do whatever. But by and large, you're right, though, in fact, that for most of these players, it's a negative EV proposition. By the way, Mike Mattisau, he had a horrible World Series, but he had a deep run in the main event.
Yep.
Did you know he was like top 120 or so? And that was good for him because he'd been playing terrible. But in the modern day age, I still think – you know, there's all kinds of accomplishments you can point to. What's most impressive? Your Harrington back-to-back final tables. Mike Mattisau made 3 main event final tables in a decade.
Yep.
That's pretty awesome. But he's
I can tell you right now, not to brag, I have enough skill to win it. I would have to get lucky. I do have to, would have to get lucky. But if it would not change my life, I would still come to the county, even play the $10 tournaments and hang out and drink beer with my friends and do all the charity events that I currently do. And you know that, John. I would absolutely do that.
Of course, you would do it to rub it in our face.
No, I wouldn't. I'd let you wear the bracelet.
I'd just steal the bracelet.
Just like when I loaned Chris Moneymaker money after, because that story, you know, where I had to take his bracelet as collateral. You've seen that. You've seen the picture, Josh?
I
loaned him some money. He paid me back. Good
Kenny, here's the problem. You're never going to win it because you're never going
to
play it.
Yeah, I need to get down there again. Golly. Anyways, I'm trying to win baseball bets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's baseball going on.
I know, finally. So
that's one of those things I'd like to play. I know you were here last week. We talked a little bit about that. You know, would you play if you won the seat and things like that? Like, I asked John if he won the Cal Neva seat, would he play? Or if he was offered $7,000, you know, what would you do? It's, you know, a lot of people, there's nothing wrong with taking the money, too, if you need it. Obviously, anyone's a long shot to even cash it. But just like anything, if you were super into hiking and you wanted to climb the whatever mountain to test yourself, to me, that's one of those things I want to play in the main event also, just to see. You know what I mean?
I do.
They give you bigger stacks these days. I mean, we've talked about it. Difficult unless you're extremely unlucky or just sort of a wild donkey. It's hard to go broke the first day, but just to test yourself against those players all over the world, all manner of skill levels, probably at your table, a few world-class people mixed with donkeys from somewhere that you can beat. I mean, there's a whole poker food chain, and just to see where you exist in that. I mean, I can't believe, to me, it would be rough to play 4 days to barely make your money back. You have $10,000 entry, you barely make 15. But I would just be, you know, I would just love to test the water someday, have that story to tell.
Oh, did you see that Phil Ivey went broke, I think, in the first level?
Yeah, he went out fast.
Yeah,
did he really?
Chasing the flush draw. Shoved it all in. He got it all in on an ace.
Daniel DeGrano went out to his first day also.
Crazy stuff. All right. World Series of Poker in full swing right now. Actually, the main event's in full swing. We are down to the final 24 players. Not any big names left in it. So, like Josh said, you know, we love talking about poker. Nick Marchington is in first place, $55 million in chips. He's got about a $12 million lead over the number two guy. So, with that being said, a lot of stuff going on in the poker world. Love poker. There's some tournaments coming to town, so if you're looking to play some poker, if you're getting the itch, make sure you do that. So, all right, with that being said, what else do we got?
We got a lot.
Did you watch tennis today, John?
I did.
I know.
Thank God.
Roger Federer.
My man. Yeah, no, we're at the office, we had it on, and it's just, you know, I'm living and dying with this stuff. Trying to work.
Able to beat a little bit at work this week, so I did some more digging in, some research. It's crazy how much history those guys have in the majors.
It's Magic and Bird.
Pretty much.
It really is what it is. And watching those, I'm such a Roger Federer fan, as anybody who listens to the show is, and I have been for years and years and years. I love it. I love that rivalry. Nadal is just an amazing player. Everything he threw at him, Nadal had an answer for. I know he won it in 4 sets, but it was a great match, and it's for them to still be doing this at that level is unbelievable. Roger's 37 years old. I mean, what's going on here? And he handles Djokovic on grass too. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see what happens. But yeah, no, Federer as a dog. In Wimbledon on grass versus Nadal, I took it all day long.
I had him too, plus 120. It was a pretty sweet deal.
It's not a huge dog, but you see Roger Federer plus
money. Came in late. He actually closed it at minus 40.
Oh,
I got it at plus 20. Yeah.
Yeah, so no, he closed at minus 40. And, you know, he's playing the Joker on the 14th, you know, Federer versus Djokovic.
Yeah.
Minus 180, Federer plus 160.
I mean, you got to do it again. You just have to do it again. I have no doubt that Djokovic is the best player in the world at this point. He definitely is. Those are three of the greatest players we'll ever see in our life in that fantastic sport. I love tennis, and it was just amazing to watch.
I really thought today, John, that Nadal was going to break him. I did too. When, you know, he won the first set 7-6. Federer did 7-6. Nadal came back 6-1, and then Federer in the third set they were right there. I thought, Nadal's getting ready. He's coming, yeah. And then he ends up losing 6-3 and 6-4 in the final.
When you see the 6-1s, you're like, well, boy, what happened to that?
He gave it up.
Yeah, he conserved energy.
Yep, exactly.
They do that, and he does that. 5 years ago, Federer was beaten down. Nadal was just kicking his butt all over the world, and he made a change. And that backhand that Roger Federer still has is one of the greatest things you'll ever see in your life. It's just poetry, and he doesn't miss with it. He just doesn't miss. It was really something to watch. And you know, win or lose, Djokovic is climbing up. You know, Roger's got 20 Grand Slams. Nadal has 18. Djokovic's got like what, 15, 16?
Yeah.
So he's getting up there himself. So win or lose, Roger won for Federer fans, at least. He won the one he had to win. But, you know, he's not satisfied. I guarantee he's not satisfied. If you can get Roger Federer plus 160 in a Wimbledon final, come on.
Josh?
It's like Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think he got to do so as well. Like I said, he seems to make some adjustments. I like Federer as well because there's so many – and I'm not a huge tennis fan, but just from what I do follow, I've seen that guy, you know, win or lose – he just has the ultimate aura of a champion. He's such a dignified guy. The way he comports himself, and I can't help but root for him. It seemed like he was retiring. I'm like, well, that's just his legacy would be great. It's kind of a fond farewell. But now that he's viable and winning again, it's like amazing to see the continuation. Because 37 for tennis is pretty ancient.
It's like Brady. It really is.
Yeah.
What about the one?
I want to see him win another one.
So they play on Sunday, and like, yeah. I said, Djokovic is minus 180, Federer's plus 160. But tomorrow, Serena plays Simone Halep. She's minus 185, and Halep is plus 165.
And Serena, similar age, similar dominance, more dominant, really, than Federer. It's unbelievable that these athletes can continue to go at this level and not – do you see Serena slowing down? No. You just don't. It's amazing. Wimbledon, and she's playing doubles, mixed doubles with Annie Murray.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So you're playing every day.
Every day.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I love Wimbledon. Is one of my favorite events of the year. It's just, you know, because it's kind of a lull in the calendar. So it's right before NFL training camp. The All-Star break was just going on. You know, we had the Women's World Cup to kind of have our attention, but Wimbledon, I just love it. So
that
give me Federer all day.
That match is tomorrow, though. The Serena Williams.
Give me Serena. Give me Federer.
Minus 185. So you like? So what about a parlay, John? A little minus 185. A little plus 160.
Why not? If you're gonna bet the Sunday match, might as well tag it on to the Saturday match if you have a lead in that.
Well, if you like Serena, I mean, just pick a side. I think. Yeah. I mean, just pick a side in the Sunday.
I just don't
match.
Like Justin Serena. It's the only Serena I don't like.
Josh, what do you do? You like?
Yeah, I like that as well because especially like I said. You know, the chalk's pretty steep on Serena, but such a big plus on Federer. I mean, I think you actually get a better payout than your standard two-teamer. Right?
I actually looked at it. If you bet $100 on the two favorites, the minus 180, the minus 185, $100 would get you back $238.
But what about the minus and plus?
Well, that would have to be – I'll figure that out on break. It'll take me 2 seconds.
Fire up that app.
Fire up the app.
I think if you truly asked Djokovic
Josh loves
who he wanted to play in this final, it would have been Nadal. You don't want to. You don't want to play the chief.
Oh, by the way, Chiefs, so you know they call them the Big Three. You mentioned, you know, the Magic Bird thing. It's like Magic Bird Jordan between the three of them.
Yeah.
So I was doing the research the other day. The three of them they've won like every major in the last 15 years.
Yeah, honestly,
yeah.
You'll have your occasional Chilich or Sanga or whoever else. Andy Murray.
Right.
Yeah, that's what it is.
All right, let's hold those thoughts. We have to go off commercial break. We'll continue talking sports after these messages on ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, we're back here at the Club Count Evo on ESPN 94.5 FM. I'm your host, Kenny B, here with Josh Nagel from Sportsline, John the Hawk Stevens across from me. Andy Juro, the Reno Pokerfish, was texting me. He loved the segment on the poker. He's actually going to make the parlay on the tennis. We were just talking about it. But going back to that poker story real quick and the Richard Seymour thing, and I was actually –
Is that the Richard Seymour that you're talking about?
Yeah, he finished really? He finished 131st.
Wow.
Yeah, but anyways, Andy brought up a good point because we're actually discussing the hand. I want to go back to that real quick, and then we'll get back onto other sports. We were playing poker live the night that it was on TV, and he made a good point. You don't ever want to go raised or excuse me, you don't ever want to lose that many chips in an unraised pot, and multiple people took that flop. So his risk versus his reward, I mean, if you were able to limp into that pot and see the flop, especially five players and somebody wants to show you that much aggression, sometimes you just have to give them a path. Yep. Even though it was that drive aboard, the guy very easily could have had pocket deuces, pocket fours, or yeah. pocket eights, or
something. I know what
you're
saying, but it wasn't limped is the thing. It was three ways, and there was a raise.
I thought more people.
It was only a raise on the button, two callers, small and big. So
I thought more people
ways.
Saw the flop.
Yeah. And that's just what it was. Raise from the ace, king of diamonds, you know, seamer in the small, shover guy in the big. Three guys. So I know what you're saying, and you're right, especially it would be if it was a family, you know, six, seven people saw it. Yeah, at some point you think, okay, no one does that without, you know, having me beat. But the way it actually played out is where it suggests you could have made, you know, could have made the call.
I'm going to have to go look at it because I had been drinking that night, obviously, because I do yeah. drink when I play poker. But just the Reno Poker Fish, he kind of agreed.
RPF.
Andy, he's not a fish. I can tell you that right now. He's pretty tough. I did for – he got out of my game the other night. I was getting ready to take all his chips, and he got up and ran like a little girl to the other table as soon as they opened a new game. You hear that? I know you're listening, Andy. So, anyways, with that being said, he says he's gonna bet favor in that, taking, you know, a couple hundred dollars. He's a big sports bettor too,
yeah.
And he's gonna try and capture that plus 2.3, favorite. So, with that being said,
I can definitely see it. It just, you know, the value of Federer just it can't be denied.
All right, you guys been watching the summer league?
Dabbling.
I've never watched it before, but obviously with the interest with Cody Martin and Jordan Caroline being in there.
I saw Cody get his ankles broken.
Huh?
I saw Cody get his ankles broken.
I didn't see that, did he?
By the Chinese guy, yeah. I'm not even kidding. That sounds like it's a made-up story. But they were playing China, and some dude put Cody on his back.
Did he?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
I didn't watch it, but
it was an international incident.
I watched a few of the Lakers games trying to see if Jordan Caroline got in there. For some reason, apparently,
I can tell you right now what he did.
I saw the first couple of Lakers games, though, and he actually did.
He played today.
Right. You know what I think is interesting about the Summer League? It's funny because some of the draft picks, there's very few. I mean, it's sort of like, similar to the G League, you know, occasionally they'll send someone down as a contract. But once in a while, you'll see guys in the Summer League who, you know, pretty clearly going to make the team. You know, they play them at Vegas, MGM, and people just like seeing, you know, high level of basically, you know, semi-pro basketball. What I appreciate about those, it's not as if these guys are invited to camp. Like 90% of these guys stand no chance of making the team. But if you ever want to see guys play basketball as hard as you possibly can, watch these summer league.
Yeah.
These guys have just barely a sliver chance of even, you know, being asked to return for, you know, camp invite or whatnot. And some of them, it's like their second or third chance. They've been recycled guys, but it's more or less just, you know, the NBA's version of a rec league with guys with some, you know, level of accomplishment. Yet they play harder than anyone you'll see. And like I said, occasionally they will. Your first round draft pick, or this, you'll stick someone in there, developmental, who's been on the roster. So you'll see a couple guys who are destined to be on the real teams. But more than anything, I just appreciate it for that aspect. If you ever want to see guys play like their lives depended on it, watch that summer league.
No, there's no doubt about that. It's. And what's funny, you know, there are lines on that. You can bet on it. And there's a couple of guys that I work with that are pretty degenerate gamblers. I hope they're listening because it's a fact. But they're, you know, trying to handicap these summer league games. And I'm like, listen, guys, I mean, you can take a stab in the dark, but you can't handicap a summer league game. You just can't.
Yep.
Oh, they're 3-1. They're 1-4. No, that doesn't matter. None of that matters.
You know, Caroline's having a good time right now. I mean, he's played in three games. He's averaging 20 minutes a game. He's averaging 14.7 points a game. He's made 10 of 26 free throws. He's shooting just a tad under 40% from the field, averaging four boards and three assists a game. You know, and look what he did today: 20 points, two rebounds, and one assist in 24 minutes of play. So
nice.
Jordan, you know, I want to see Jordan make it. I mean, obviously, I want to see Cody and Jordan make it, you know, with that being said, you know. So that's the reason I was asking you about, you know, what Jordan's – and I think that if Paul George would have went to the Lakers – excuse me, not Paul George, Kawhi would have went to the Lakers, I think it would have been on almost certainty that Caroline makes the Lakers roster.
Because they have even less room. They have to have minimum
exactly.
size.
And yeah. I'm afraid now that they're going to be able to go get a bunch of higher-priced – mid-level players,
yeah, mid-level,
so to speak.
Mid-level exceptions.
Yeah.
Exemptions.
Yeah, so yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's not just a showcase for the Lakers with Caroline. Obviously, it's a showcase for the rest of the league to say, okay, I mean, that guy can fit in our system. So it's, you know, it's just the, what's best for him. I would love, you know, I'd love to see him, you know, play for Lakers. He's a kid from the Chicago area. I'm sure, you know, maybe end up with the Bulls, something like that. The Bulls don't exactly have a stacked roster, so.
You know, with all these free agent signings, John, we're talking about, you know, Chris Paul going back to Oklahoma City and Westbrook going to Houston. There's a lot of teams right now that have a lot of money tied up in two players.
Yeah, and, well, Chris Paul's only going to be there for a short time.
Yeah, he might not even be there by opening tip-off.
No, exactly. Sam Presti's not one to sit on.
He's not bringing
like
Chris
that.
Paul in to.
No, they're going to flip him. My guess is the Heat. To pair him up with Jimmy Buckets, but I don't know. It seems like I don't think there's a good fit for Chris Paul anymore. They're just he's not the CP3 that he was. You know, it's just not. I don't know. And see, watching, I know Harden and Westbrook obviously played together
in
the past, but that's
who's
going to
play
be,
point.
Who knows? I don't know what's going on in the NBA.
Hold on.
NBA is unbelievable right now.
I know. I've never seen anything like it.
It's amazing.
And they're already talking about changing the rules. But anyways, I want to get through Cody and Caleb real quick. You know, like I said, and Cody on the other side, he's played in four games this year. He's averaging 25 minutes a game, 9.5 points a game for Charlotte. He's made 12 of 28, 43% from the field. He's averaging more rebounds than Jordan at 4.3. So with that being said, you know, it's exciting to see what these guys are doing, John and Josh. I mean, I think Cody has to make the roster because he was a fairly high pick. Second round pick. So, John, your thoughts on that? Cody making the roster for the Hornets?
Well, if he can stick at the point guard, I think it's almost I wouldn't say a certainty, but at he's listed at 6'7". I think he's a little closer to 6'5". But that's still a big point guard. If he can handle playing the point and consistently knock down that outside shot, I think he's got a heck of a shot.
Absolutely. I'm impressed with
as long as they don't play Team China again.
Yeah, I'm impressed with Caroline's 3 points, his
range. I was too. When I saw his percentage, I was like, wow, because as we know, he struggled last year. And, you know, obviously you go to the NBA, it's even further out, you know, how he would fare, but that's a pretty decent percentage. But like you mentioned, Ken, I thought as well he might be a good fit for the Lakers, who were going to have limited financial options with their salary cap or whatnot, but even if he doesn't work out there, mentioned there's teams like the Bulls, or now it appears like the Thunder. The Bulls are in a complete rebuild. And what's funny is if you actually look at the roster, you see Wendell Carter, you see some pieces. They're not bad. But compared to what the rest of the league is doing, the Bulls are in rebuild mode. So that was not a bad idea thrown out there. But generally speaking, suggesting he doesn't even make the Lakers for a minute, I think he might have a place just because, as we mentioned a couple weeks ago, at least I'm of the belief, I think he's got the size and determination to just sort of be a specialist. I think he's got the skill set to go in there and just be your designated, your lockdown defender / rebounder who can give you some minutes. I think he'll hang on somewhere. Cody Martin, from the clips I've seen, I thought he looked pretty impressive. And part of the reason the NBA scouts liked him is because he has good size for NBA guard. I've just seen some of the highlights where
he's
he drags in
there.
And yeah, he's a pretty good defender, but it also looks like he's pretty comfortable. When he gets into the lane, he's making good decisions.
Yeah.
He's a bigger guard. I've seen him take guys down and shoot over him in the lane, and it looks like he's pretty comfortable on that level.
One thing that I noticed from the box score the other night of Jordan Caroline's 27-point game, he had 3 3-pointers.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's...
He's a streaky shooter, though. I mean, we know for a fact,
he
John. Went,
yeah, he had that 6-for-6 in the first half against Colorado State, but
and his 44 output
Jordan,
in New Mexico.
Jordan, much like Cameron Oliver before him, was one of those guys that when they would shoot the three, I'd be going, no!
Yes!
And then it goes in, you're like, all right, yeah, that's fine. So, I mean, if he can consistently shoot, you know, 30, I'll take 30% from three from Jordan Caroline, then that's a player right there with the other skill set that he brings to the table. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's mini Draymond Green territory.
And Caleb yet to take the floor this year because I think he's got – did he hurt his knee?
Is it a recurring injury?
I can't keep up with there's so
now
many
that's
points.
Rough. When you're a borderline guy, just even trying to possibly get that tryout invitation, you have injury hangups on top of it. It's a tough go if you can't even be out there showing your skill set.
Yeah, I know. Bullet change the station. We don't.
So look at this. So you got the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Bucks. You got the Lakers 3-1 to win the NBA championship. I would never bet that in a million years at 3-1. You have the Clippers at 350-1. I would never bet that.
I wouldn't either.
I like the Bucks coming out of the East. I mean, why not take the Bucks at +$6? I mean,
well, because they're not coming out of the East.
Okay, so who's it going to be? The Sixers at 9-1.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I mean,
you got it.
I'd be looking for the value in the East instead of trying to figure out who from the West is going to come out.
It's not a bad idea. I agree. Even Kawhi Leonard, it's kind of funny because we haven't talked about that. He hadn't made up his mind yet when we were on the show last week. But for as long as it took him to make up his mind, I thought it was kind of bad form to wait so long. I ultimately thought, man, maybe he's just going back to Toronto. Why not? You know, he won the championship. He kind of likes being a small pond kind of guy. But that makes all the sense in the world. One, they always said he wanted to go to L.A. But secondly, when you realize, just based on his personality and what he showed, he didn't seem to be the type to be the third guy along with LeBron and Anthony, Showtime type of guy.
Yeah.
So as much as it seemed like everyone was persuaded that the Lakers were the favorite, I just couldn't see it. So as much as he just kept deliberating, I thought, well, maybe after everything it will be Toronto. Then when they announced it overnight, I woke up to the news like everyone else, the Clippers. I'm like, you know what? It makes sense. It really does. For him to go to the younger brother L.A. team.
It made the most sense to me all along, especially because he's kind of on record as outwardly saying, no, I was not a Laker fan when I grew up.
But yeah, he wanted to go back where he was from. He wanted to play where he was from.
Yeah.
And you're right, all year long, back when the Spurs and all that disaster happened, they shipped him to the Raptors. The Raptors were seen as a holding spot for him on his way to the Clippers. Then that just sort of got lost when the season happened and you win a championship and all that got kind of clouded. And the Clippers, instead of rebuilding, ended up being pretty good last year. For some reason, that whole idea, Ken, just got sort of lost in the shuffle, but it ultimately ended up happening anyway.
I think the Warriors are 12-1, or probably I would never bet that either. John, do you really like the Sixers at 9-1, or are you? Just,
oh, 9-1, absolutely. No, that's, I know it's hard to
coming out of the East.
Speak about, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you figure they're going to be in the East Finals.
I think that's almost a given. Health,
Yeah, of course.
With that notwithstanding, but yeah, there's a lot of value at 9-1 with the Sixers there.
So, and what about the Celtics at 25-1, real quick?
I don't know, man.
I always thought they were going to turn the page this year with Hayward coming back.
If they would have kept, I know they got Kemba, but I always thought Rozier was a guy that was such a problem for teams that he didn't get the run that he should have gotten, I believe. And he's in a good spot in Charlotte now. I think he's going to thrive there. But it's just losing Horford, Kyrie, Terry Rozier, Marcus Morris.
Yeah.
That's a lot, man.
I agree. It's crazy. Like I said, I'm looking to figure out who I can get to come out of the West for my future bet right here. So
the Blazers, the Nuggets.
Yes, I know. Somebody's going to be there. So with that, we have to head off to our early commercial break. Be back after these messages on traffic on ESPN 94.5 FM.
Now, back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
Welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show here with Josh Nagle.
American Century.
American Century. That's what we're talking about on the break, the American Century. We were just talking about, I haven't seen any updates. I saw an update on my phone, and John hadn't seen it yet. And he goes, I guarantee you Tony Romo's winning. And actually, Tony Romo is the leader right now. Let me see what I got right here.
You mean the greatest quarterback in Cowboys history, Tony Romo?
I have no problem with that argument. Zero.
Well, statistically.
Yeah.
Cowboys quarterbacks are measured by one thing, and that's rings, and he has none, so you can't be the best, right?
And Thomas Carr did correct me on the hot dog eating contest. It was 10 minutes, not 12 minutes, because I remember they actually decreased the time.
Yes.
So, sorry, Dom. 70 dogs and buns, 10 minutes, Ken. Thank you, Thomas Carr. But anyways, it wasn't so much, John, that you were surprised at who was in first place. It was surprised to.
That's amazing to me.
Patrick Peterson. Would you have ever guessed that?
No, I wouldn't. And what's funny is, he's one of the greatest athletes on earth, so why wouldn't he be good if he decided he wanted to do that? He's a phenomenal football player, two-way, just weapon, so might as well be great at golf.
So it says Tony Romo, he birdied six of his final 11 holes to take the first-round lead. That's absolutely crazy.
Do you have, like, a leaderboard?
No, not really. Just this right here. Charles Barkley's minus 12.
What?
Yeah.
Oh,
with the Stableford.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, wait a second.
Yeah, she's
my man Charles.
He comes back every year and takes it. He takes it.
Get off my man Charles.
That's crazy. John Smoltz is in fourth.
I was just going to say, I bet Smoltz is up there.
Derek Lowe. It looks like Derek Lowe's right there,
Lowe.
Too. Yeah, so I'm just kind of going.
Starting pitchers, man. Yeah. What else are you going to do those other 4 days?
Did he hit somebody and they threw it in the hole? So, anyways, Barkley.
I haven't been up there forever.
Here's the deal, though. There's 90 players in the field. Barkley's ahead of 14 of them.
There you go.
How bad? How hungover, drunk, or because Barkley's not good?
Well, that's what the amazing thing is about Barkley is he was shooting in the 70s like 15, 20 years ago, and he has this mental block. I have it too. I identify with the man.
Yeah. You listen to this, Josh?
I would love – oh, God, imagine me and Charles on the golf course.
I say for a while there, it did seem like you mentioned way back in the day you played with Jordan quite a bit, and something was taken somewhat seriously for a while. This whole celebrity thing, it's kind of funny to be that embarrassingly bad. It is just sort of comical. I feel for him, too. But I think if you're going to go there and do that every year, why not at least just go back and take a couple lessons from your local pro?
He's broken this thing down a million times, Josh. It is completely –
he went to the Haney School of Golf.
Yeah. All right. They had a whole show
Over the past few years, though, I'm just happy to see some new blood infused because the celebrity golf, it's always fun. I always watch the final day where they have, like any other tournament, it actually comes down and somebody wins it, and it's pretty competitive. But it seemed like for like 20 years, it was just Rick Roden or Jack Wagner. I'm tired of the old school guys. I'm glad Tony Romo, Mark Mulder, there's some fresh blood in there.
Quinn used to always
It was like one of those three guys. I'm like, all right, I'm done. Like they just dominate, so top heavy. So to me, it's kind of cool, especially when you see some like what I think Steph Curry was. I think top five last year. He threatened to win it.
Really good.
So I'd like to see where there's more current
Timberlake's
athletes
pretty
threatening
good too.
To win it. Yeah, right.
It's just funny to talk about these.
Wasn't Aaron Rodgers pretty good?
I think Aaron Rodgers is pretty good. Of course, he would be good.
He's down there.
It's a great event.
And you're right, it would be hilarious like if Justin Timberlake somehow finished at the top five. Can you imagine the galleries on Sunday if he somehow got on fire and was making birdies down the stretch?
Justin!
I know. I mean, that threesome has just got to be.
It's awesome. We posted it on our Kenny B's Handicapping Facebook page.
Which you can get, yeah.
Yeah, and it's that threesome's Justin Timberlake, Tony Romo, and Steph Curry. That's a pretty fun threesome of three pretty good golfers as well.
Go ahead, keep
and
talking.
And a lot of fun. Those guys look like they're having the time of their life out there, and why not? It's July in Lake Tahoe. Where else would you rather be, Josh, to quote your man Marv Levy?
Yeah, it's pretty nice. And what's cool is, of course, given the celebrity nature of the deal, you're supposed to do the pictures and all that. So all expenses paid for them. Like I said, it's basically just a comped vacation. They get to play golf. And in return, all he says, you know what, just be nice to the people. Do the pictures, do the autographs, whatever. That means
you too, Marshall Faulk.
That's basically the job or whatever. They have to perform in return. And so for that, though, they get comped the beautiful suites at Harvey's and just get comped these rounds of golf and great meals. How could you really turn it down?
No, I know it. It's a really, really cool event, and we're lucky to have it here.
Absolutely. I mean, you know what's crazy is I've never been there. I mean, all the years I've been here, me being a golf, I love to play golf, love sports, I've never been there.
Last time I went was years and years and years ago. Jeremy Roenick, great hockey player, probably my favorite player of all time, was out there, and he goes, "You guys are the only guys that have recognized me all day long. Everybody's cheering for Michael and Charles and Margo Lemieux," and everybody goes, "You guys are the only guys." And so he loved it. So we were sticking with him the whole time, followed him from hole to hole.
Was he talking to you and stuff?
The whole time. He's the coolest dude ever, Jeremy Roenick.
How cool is Brock Lesnar?
Brock Lesnar was pretty cool. He was really cool.
It's weird that, you got these extremely, extremely popular athletes, but when you get with the mega extremely popular athletes, they kind of go underneath the radar,
it's
and they're
true.
Like, "It is no, absolutely, absolutely."
You want to be treated like a normal dude. That's how it was with these guys.
Yeah, so that's cool.
It was a lot of fun. That's a great event. It's amazing that you haven't been up there.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. Can you believe that Mike Trout right now is -350 to win the MVP halfway through with a half a year left? That seems a little. I mean, that's a little bit of an overlay in my opinion.
Who
boys.
Else is coming though?
So much could happen. I mean, I
know so much could happen, but Trout's.
Well, don't you remember last year when James Harden at this point was -$7 to win the MVP?
But it's a whole different animal.
Why? I don't think
because Mike Trout is just so head and shoulders above everybody.
I know.
He really is.
Last year, James Harden was too.
By the way, you mentioned that, and we went over the odds. I remember that. You said Harden was a huge shock. Remember, second place at the time was Giannis at like 4-1.
Yeah.
He came out and won it. You could have had him with like a month to go in the season with those great odds. But I just saw, because I did a thing for Sportsline. Again, we're looking ahead, all the crazy NBA transactions. And say, look up MVP. And I did fire up the William Hill app. And
what'd
saw
you do?
Giannis, 3-1. He's the defending champion or whatever. He's favored to repeat at 3-1, and you have Harden and Steph Curry at 5-1. So apparently with the Warriors and all their turnover, they expect Curry to just have a monster
John,
year. That's Kawhi and LeBron and Davis at 8-1.
Yeah.
John.
Yo.
Shannon Kinney just sent me a text.
Great.
And she said, Jeremy Roenick hit a ball out of his caddy's mouth today that was holding a tee.
There you go.
So he's to get the and I saw it. Now I didn't know it was Roenick though. I saw it. The guy's laying on his back. He's got a tee in his mouth with the ball on top of it. And
this is the type of dude I'm talking about. Jeremy Roenick is amazing.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean that doesn't surprise me in the least. I'm like when you said that, I'm like, oh, that checks out.
Yeah.
JR is just nuts, and he's the coolest dude of all time, and he has some of the greatest hockey hair that there's ever been.
Better than Barry Melrose?
It's similar. It's in that realm. It really is.
I'm just, for the record, gentlemen, I'm not a Barry Melrose fan.
I don't expect you to be.
All right. Are you Barry Melrose?
I'm not really either.
I love him.
All right. Of course you do.
I love him.
Anyways. All right. Josh, what else is going on these days? We got UFC and stuff going on right now. We got some boxing going on. I have a question. I'm going to present this to you guys. How much interest would there be if we showed the Pacquiao fight here? They really came with a high price for us, so I was dead set to do it. But the price that came in, it was pretty steep. We won't make our money back on the but how popular is the Pacquiao Thurman fight?
Yeah, you know what, Ken? It's a good question. I would say he still has enough name cachet. I would think that would carry it, right? I
mean, nice word.
You know, Pacquiao, Floyd, and he's still one of the names that resonates with the public, even though he hasn't been terribly active in the past few years and low past his prime. But if you just, again, he's clearly the A side of that promotion because I'm convinced outside a lot of boxing people outside of hardcore still don't even know who Keith Thurman is, even though he's undefeated WBA welterweight champion. But if you promote it like that, hey, Pacquiao fight, everyone's, hey, let's check him out. I think it'd do all right. People come out to see the Pac-Man.
Yeah, people don't know Keith Thurman yet?
You know what? To me, not beyond your hardcore boxing. Like, your semi-casuals, again, he's been on PBC. He's been on free TV a bunch of times. He's been on CBS. So if you follow it a little bit, yeah. But I just mean your average fan who only knows a few names, they won't know him.
That's what you do is you market him because everybody knows Pacquiao.
Well, let's talk about this real quick, John. I'm sorry. Did you have something to add to that?
Nope.
Which, by the way, Ken, the odds have flipped in that fight.
Why are you stealing my thunder?
Sorry, I just
quit stealing Ken's thunder, Josh.
Go ahead.
Come on, man.
Thunder
stealer.
No, 2 weeks ago, Pacquiao was +130.
Right.
And right now, it's flipped. Pacquiao's -135 now.
Okay, then there you go.
Thurman at +15.
There you go. I'm in. Now that has flipped, and I can come. I'm a Pacquiao fan, but Thurman plus money, give it to me.
Yeah, I hear you.
It's such a tightly matched fight. I agree. It's funny, too, because if you were really paying attention, back in the day, that was the way to bet boxing, way before any apps or even the digital boards came out. Way back in the 80s, even 90s, you know what you did is you went shopping at all the different sports books. And what happened is odds makers would have different feelings about the fighter. So especially if it was an extremely close fight, you would see different lines just like that. Hey, one book's posted -120. The other book has it +120. And people with the really steep pockets, that's how they make a ton of money at boxing. Go to every shop in town, and eventually they end up with both guys at +125 and just fire as big a bet as they could at both guys because you can't lose. So it's impossible to do these days with all the digital realms and everyone knowing what everyone else is posting.
Screen scraper.
Having said that, if you were paying attention to this fight and you jumped in early and thought, hey, you know
what? We said this, Pacquiao, too. We said that Pacquiao's
a nice deal at +125. If you jumped on him, now you could do the same thing. Scalp Thurman and coming back at +120 and not lose. But
we said this, Josh. We said that the square people know Pacquiao. The late money's coming in on Pacquiao. Yep. It's not coming in on Thurman.
Right.
But that's not true right now. I think because it's flipped, people are going to be looking to get Thurman. I think a couple of us probably said that we thought before fight time Pacquiao would be the favorite in this fight.
Yep. It was so much so that I figured I knew he wouldn't remain the underdog for long, but even as recently as last week it was down to -110 on both sides, so basically a pick-up. And then when I just revisited the odds yesterday and saw that, I'm like, there you go, not surprising. So now with the plus money on the guy who's 10 years younger, undefeated champion, you can't really go wrong.
You can't go
value.
I'm shocked to hear that's what the line is, that Pacquiao is thought of to have a real shot at winning this fight. It's a guy that I think was shot 2 years ago, so I don't. It's really surprising to me, and it's making me rethink my stance.
So, anyways, exciting. I'm excited.
So, what do you think, Ken? I mean, would you lean towards?
No, I'm not. Well, obviously,
having the property sign up for it.
Me, I don't know yet. I'm gonna give it a little bit more thought. But going back to the fight, Josh, there's no way I can bet Pacquiao now. I mean, I'm not going to price myself out of this bet, when I could have got +130 and laid 35. I mean, that's just absolutely ridiculous.
Totally.
So with that being said, I'll be looking to play some Thurman money. did they put a line prop up yet? That probably won't come out until this fight's next weekend. No, you know what? I probably won't show it because the marketing, I would need a little bit more marketing to get out there to let everybody know that we had it. We did show the John Jones fight last weekend here at the Club County event. It was only about three quarters of the way full. It was because we got so late to the game, we didn't have enough marketing time to get it out there, which usually fights like John Jones, we sell out. So it's just, right. And it's just because not enough time to market it. So with that being said, I'd be looking to maybe bet some Thurman.
All right.
I think that's the only way to go. I mean, what am I saying? But it is Manny Pacquiao. But
well, you can't bet Pacquiao now.
You can't bet Pacquiao now.
Yeah, that's
you price himself out right there, and it's just I firmly it's shocking to me that he would be a favorite against Keith Thurman at this point.
But, well, the thing is, like I said, there's some naysayers with Thurman, which is sort of understandable. Just that he's been inactive. He was out two full years with an injury before coming back a couple months ago. What they called a tune-up fight, purposely put him against a journeyman. It's supposed to be he got by with a split decision. Barely, the guy almost had him out. So Thurman, in the prior 2 years, he hadn't looked good there either. So I think it's more so there's just doubts about how legit Thurman is. But this will prove it one way or the other.
Maybe I can bet Pacquiao then. Well, I need to do a little more research. I need to talk to Terry and Tommy Lane. I'll give them a call and find out exactly what they think. You know, my boxing aficionados.
Wait, what if they're split?
Well, then
go with Tommy.
Go with Tommy, yeah.
You go with Tommy. Yeah.
Tommy Lane, is he the cooler Lane?
Right now, Tommy's got a big lead on Terry. Although Terry friend requested me yesterday. So,
oh, did he?
So maybe he's back in my good graces.
Maybe if they get back to Reno, you know, before they put on the Let's Fight, Get It On
yes, Brandy,
boxing promotion. So with that being said, you know what's funny is the other day on ESPN, I was listening. They were talking about the best announcers of all time, and they were doing all these things. And one of the guys, it was on VSiN, excuse me, and they were saying all these guys, and the last guy goes, "You guys crazy? Mills Lane, let's get it on." And I thought, yes, that's exactly who the best referee is of all time in any sport, in my opinion. Of course, I'm biased. One of my good friends, so I really, you know, I give that man as much respect as I can give any other
human being in my life. Well, the thing is, how many other referees can people name?
Yeah, that's true.
It goes Mills, and then what do you
got? Joey Crawford.
I mean, we know him.
Hockley, and that's it. Only because it's biased.
Earl Hebner.
Yeah, so. All right, let's go after our last commercial break. We'll come back and continue to talk sports on ESPN 94.5 FM.
Now, back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right, we're back for the last segment of the William Hill Sports Show, coming to you live from the Club County on ESPN 94.5 FM. Hey, don't forget, the Pro Pick'em Contest, I think, is out, Josh. You know, we're talking about NFL football season and college football season less than 60 days away. You know, with the first August 24th is the first college game, and September 5th is the first pro game. You know, that's the Thursday night game, Packers and Bears minus 3.5, 46.5 in that total right now. But with that being said, you know, here we are, guys, within 60 days. Make sure you sign up for the William Hill Pro Pick'em Contest. I think $300,000 in prizes they're giving away.
We're going to give away entries?
Yeah, I'll give away some entries again this year. We'll do that to some listeners and hand those out. So Josh is slapping.
Well, I was just going to say, I did mention it last week's show, the registration was open, so you might as well, again, before football picks up steam and the lines get bigger, you could register now and just forget about the hassles later. But I went over all the pro pick'em rules and everything last weekend there. But look, Ken, right on your odds sheet, they give you all of them. And apparently college is open too.
75,000.
The big little higher stakes spread contest for college football is open as well, and might as well sign up for that one while the getting's good.
The college contest, it's seven picks each week against the spread. Was it five last week?
Seven.
Was it seven? So you entered.
I'm a little disappointed only last 10
Well, you were
weeks.
In it.
Right, because I think you could go 12 easily. 10 is such a limited window. But I've done it, and, hey, the rules are the same for everybody, so no whining about that. But last year I had a pretty good run. But, Ken, the records were amazing. I mean, the people are starting to pick up registration with that because I think it was much higher population than last year. But I ended up with a pretty good record, like, 70 games. I think I was, 43-27, which you think, oh, it's not that bad. But the winning, but put it this way, John, there's an extra bonus if you get like 50 correct. I think it triggers some sort of extra cash bonus. It's on there somewhere. But last year it only pays three spots, right? So it's like, hey, you got to be best of the best. And the three winning records, so again, number of wins against 70, it was 50, 49, and 48.
Wow.
So I thought I had a heck of a year, 43, 27. I wouldn't even close sniffing the cash.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's how it goes.
And the college contest is against the spread.
Yes.
Against the spread.
Think about 50-20. I mean,
Versus the ATS. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And the pro contest is you just pick
just
each of the games
up.
On
Although
Sunday.
That's not as easy as it looks either sometimes.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. I wonder what the percentage – I'm going to look at that.
I wonder if you're lonesome tonight.
I wonder if what the difference in the percentage is versus the spread and not versus the spread last year. Because this was big, Josh, the college.
So, yeah, it's pretty sweet. But if you look at that kid, that was my goal every week. I figured the college, just so long as you don't have a losing week, you know, you should be all right. But it's one of those things. Sometimes, you know, you're going to be off a little bit with your spread picks. So long as you didn't have, like, a disaster. Like, a 3-4 you could get away with, but you got to recover. But I remember last year, Ken, the first 4 weeks, I went 6-1 three times and had a 5-2. Great start. It still happened. Like I said, 1-3-4. If you think about the 50-20, that's literally 5-2 every single week. That's real hard to pull off.
Absolutely. It just is. All right, with that being said, John, Josh,
yes.
We talked about the first Saturday, August 24th, two games on that day, Hawaii versus Arizona. Arizona's traveling to Hawaii, laying 11.5. Then we have Florida versus Miami, Florida. Florida going on the road, laying 7.5. The college football season is going to open up with two road favorites. Obviously. Golly, this guy's going to hit into a double play and get out of this.
I kind of like that Hawaii's getting that every year, getting that early game, and you know, getting that stuff out of the way, and it's a Florida Miami though. That's come on now. What are we talking about?
Yeah, let's define your year immediately. Immediately, you know, and there's a handful of games on Thursday, and then the Pac opens up that Friday, John, August 30th. Pac at home versus Purdue, 6:30 kickoff.
I like it.
Pac getting 9. Purdue coming here laying 9 on the road, John or Josh, John, first game.
Listen,
of the year.
I'll tell you right now, as you know, as a Wolfpack fan, just like my buddy Cody's a Wolfpack fan as well, we all are. 9 points seems almost like giving it away for Purdue. I think Purdue's going to come in here and light us up.
John, we always play well, it seems like, early in the year. I mean, I need to find out a little bit more. I need to hear some more news about what's going on with the quarterback situation at Nevada. That's what I need to know. Because I think
bingo.
I mean, you're right, John.
We've heard the whispers that Malik Henry, the ultra-talented Florida State signee that went through Last Chance U and went through all that stuff. He has every tool in the world. It's just whether he can be the leader or not. That's everything we've heard. We don't know if these things are true or not. You know, you hear little things here and there. But that's exactly what it is. If Josh, it's a principle to me. If I can get a Big Ten team playing the Nevada Wolfpack in single digits, I'm going to take it. I don't like it. I don't love that. I want the Wolfpack to win every game that they ever play. But that's just not reality to me.
Yeah, I hear you. Not to mention, you know, the Wolfpack, especially last year's, Rod was up pretty good as a home underdog, but they progressed as the season went on. With this one, too, I've done more research on Purdue because I knew they had some good players coming back. But remember, for the longest time, the last couple of years, they actually rotated quarterbacks. One of them was David Blau, a guy who lit up Nevada a couple of times. He actually got drafted. I think he's on the Cleveland Browns right now. He's the one that left, but the other one was Elijah Sindelar, who's back. Sindelar started last year, but then broke his ankle or whatever. They went with Blau the rest of the way. Sindelar got that extension, like the medical redshirt or whatever. So he's back. And the freshman receiver who was setting national records, Rondale Moore, he's back.
Yeah.
So Purdue had one of the most explosive offenses in the country. Remember, they beat Ohio State by about 40 points last year. They've got a whole bunch of guys from that. And so they're coming in here, Nevada being the relative unknown. I think Purdue's experience and everything's going to shine through.
So, Josh, right now,
there's
John.
An explosive offense.
So right now you're saying that take Purdue.
I would.
Kenny, let's examine this really quick. I know it's Purdue. But
yeah, I know.
It's not Purdue.
You know, here's the deal. 100% last year, you guys can't deny what I'm going to say is that I was the one guy that was 100% adamant Nevada going over last year in season win totals, and they did, and that's including losing to Vegas in Vegas. So I mean, we should have went over by a game and a half.
Yeah, easily.
It was over before game 6.
23-point lead.
I was there. You know how cold it got from the time that...
You know how cold it got in my living room?
Oh man, well you should have been there. Anyways,
no, I'm glad I wasn't there. I'd still be in that prison that right outside of town.
Yeah. So, anyways, I don't have a feel this year. You know, I need a little bit more information, but I'm going to have – but I'm with you, Josh and John. I think maybe – man, but if it stays under – if it gets over 10, it's a pack for me. If it gets over 10, it's the pack for
12,
me.
12 –
But I agree with the start pilot all when it's, you know, 13.5 at kickoff, it's layoff. And it's kind of funny because, like everyone else, I don't like to make straight bets so far ahead of time, have my money wrapped up. But if there was ever a time to do it, John, I think it's now. Because so long as it's under 10, Purdue's a major value side.
Major
like
value.
I'm not going to be laying 13.5, 14
well,
like the rest of the
would it shock me if we nine. Played a close game, maybe
let's,
lost a close game?
Let's look,
not at all. Would it shock me if we won? It would.
Let's handicap this game real quick from the public's perspective.
Yeah.
Okay? The wise guys aren't coming in at game time and gobbling up Nevada.
Yeah.
If you like Purdue, bet it now because it is going to go to 10, 10.5. Guarantee it. This might be the only time that you can get Purdue. Exactly.
Do it right now.
But if you like Nevada, just put your money back in your pocket and just wait a little bit, and you can get Nevada plus 10. I firmly believe that.
And, you know, it pains me that I'm always on this side because nobody loves Wolfpack more than me. You know,
me.
Maybe you, maybe Kona. But other than that, I look at it from just a gambling standpoint. Like, what did your college baseball coach used to tell you?
Don't tell me.
Show me. I've heard enough about how the Wolfpack's in the corner. Show me.
Yeah. And I think that we're headed in the right direction. For everything I'm reading is we're bigger and we're stronger and we're faster, which, you know, and I've seen the difference in the size of athletes we're putting on the field. I'll tell you what, though. I'll tell you what terrified me. When we went to Vanderbilt to Tennessee last year, watching Vanderbilt walk out and how big those boys were.
That was a wake-up
call. Oh, my goodness.
As you know, that's a middle-of-the-road SEC team, barely bowl eligible. Yeah. And look at the night and day difference there was. Physicality.
Josh, it was
you don't understand
shocking.
How big these guys are.
It was just like
it was NFL sized boys.
It really was, and it was.
And
the Wolfpack looked like a high school team.
And Vanderbilt didn't play that well.
They didn't play well at all.
No, they turned it over a bunch. Believe me, I remember the game. They went for it at fourth and goal early and missed. They did all kinds of mistakes and still.
Can we go back to Nashville?
Ran into a blowout.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't care if it's a football game, a basketball game.
Yeah, I don't care what's going on. Just take me back to Tootsie's.
Oh, man. I remember,
take me back to
I went
Tootsie's.
Down, I remember that well last year. I went down a day earlier, and John texted me. I was by myself at a bar. He goes, how is it? I go, it's whatever you expect.
Some couple bought you dinner.
You by yourself? Oh, yeah, my buddies are all coming in tomorrow. I was having a good time. Yeah. And they paid for everything. I was like, what is going on here?
Kenny said, not to step on you, Kenny said, everything you ever dreamed of Nashville being, it's 10 times better than that.
And John goes, yeah. And he gets there. He's like, he didn't want to go home.
It's the greatest place. I've been around this world. I've been in 22 countries of this world. That Nashville's the greatest place I've ever been.
Josh, if you like country music,
I got to check it out.
If you don't like country music, if you just like people, if you just like being in an electric atmosphere at Nashville.
That's where 24/7 Sports, one of our alliances, is headquartered. Yeah. Literally, their staff is our staff. I see these guys at all our staff retreats or whatnot. So I guess they always say, hey, you guys should swing by. I guess I got to make a trip to go
visit
those guys.
I'll come with you.
Check it out.
All right. We've got a little bit less than a minute left. Hey, the pro football contest and the college football contest, they're ready for enrollment here at the William Hill Sportsbook. You make sure you do all your wagering at William Hill, too. It's a full-service sportsbook right on your mobile phone, your home computer, your iPad. www.williamhill.us. Like I said, a full-service sports betting app right at your fingertips. And you can bet everything on this. I mean, if there's big lines, skip the lines. Bet on the app. Come down, sign up at the Calneva, and download all the William Hill stuff. You can still get Josh Nagel stuff on Sportsline, and you can follow Josh Nagel on Twitter at JoshNagel1. You can follow me on Twitter at Ken Barler.
You can find me at the Santa Fe in about 10 minutes.
We're going down to the Santa Fe for the grand opening. So do all your wagering with William Hill. We'll see you next week. Same time, same place on ESPN 94.5 FM.